guys, welcome back to the Go Ham Podcast. I'm Alicia.
I'm Heather.
And I'm Monica.
Today we're doing a deep dive into what is driving stylists out of salons.
So typically in interviews, I always want to find out, well, what's driving you? What are your challenges and struggles that you're having in your current salon location? And mostly that question for me is driven by the fact that I want to make sure that whatever it is something that we
aren't
doing different,
yeah,
or, you know, something like that. So yesterday, for example, her challenges were, it seems as if the description of the job that she's doing is different. She's an apprentice, an assistant, whatever we call them.
Mm-hmm.
And she used the example of, you know, I feel like I was hired as an assistant, but all I do is put IKEA furniture together. And, you know, not that I'm, it's just that I feel like that, it's like you're sold a dream oftentimes.
Yeah.
That sometimes you sit down for an interview with a company and they sell you all the positives about what this company does and is. And then essentially as you drift further into that position, it turns into something completely else.
Yeah. So if you're tuning in, I think you need to make sure your job description is living up to the expectations of what they're actually doing in a day-to-day operation.
For sure.
No, I was just going to say it's such a letdown for somebody to, you know, you're pursuing. I mean, these kids come out of school not knowing what they want to do. Then they go to hair school and they decide, this is my goal. This is what I want to do. And then they get into a hair salon and they're not doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, what a letdown. Like, that's so disappointing.
I think what's important to mention too, with like the generations now, like they're so hungry to learn.
Oh, yeah.
And they're down to put the work in. But like, also if you're not like offering them like ways that they can like practice and like physically do hair, like that's kind of like going to drive them out for sure.
Yep.
Like with the new generation now.
The biggest thing that I see in the interviews is education.
Yeah.
You know, every person that comes to our company, I think, is drawn in by the education offerings. You know, obviously we prioritize that, but I think that's something that everybody's looking for. One of the perks and benefits of being a part of a commission salon in 2024 is education. And if you're not doing that or providing that, you're essentially putting yourself in a position to lose team members because of it.
Yeah. Speaking of interviews, an interview that I had last week, basically she was kind of driven out because their owners weren't open to her providing different services. So I think there's something to be said with that. And just recently we kind of changed the way we do things because we were requiring people to do certain services.
Yeah.
She wanted to provide like a different service that they weren't offering already.
This was if I'm remembering properly, it was extensions.
Yeah.
A specific type of extensions that they did not want her to do.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And they basically like turned her down and told her no. And she was like, well, I'm certified in this and I can't do it. So basically like I'm out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't blame her. I mean, she spends all that time and effort and money getting certified and learning something. And then she can't even do it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess it can be frustrating. Like as a salon owner, you're always being brought like different ideas. Like, oh, did you see this brand is offering this? And I think it's like trying to find the balance between the two of not always like, you know, saying yes, but also like doing the research and saying like, hey, like I did look into this. I'm not going to bring it in. This is why.
Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side of that, it's to what you just said, like requiring people to do services that they may not be comfortable with. Now, this one I feel is tricky because as a mentor and a coach to the young generation that's with our company, I think it's very easy for them to be discouraged by services that they're not comfortable with. And it's finding that, you know, like I need to be aware of, do you just not like cutting men's hair because you don't know how to cut men's hair?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or is it that this is a service that like you have zero interest in providing in the future? So that I feel is a little bit of a more complex scenario.
And for us, it took us a while to figure that out. I feel like because we went in, when we opened, we were very like, this is our services. Everyone was expected to do it. And then I feel like as the years went on, we started to realize, you know, the negatives it has when you force a stylist to do something they're not comfortable with or want to do.
Yep.
Well, it bit us in the ass. Like,
it sure did.
You know, you're making them do something that they don't want to do, they're not passionate about doing, so they're not going to be good at doing it. And that in turn is going to, you know, you're going to end up with like an unhappy client and an unhappy stylist. So it's like a lose-lose situation.
Yeah. I'm like slightly disappointed it took us this long to figure it out.
It's kind of embarrassing. It's a little embarrassing.
But yeah, I mean, I feel good about the decision now.
Yeah.
After we worked through it and... Yeah. I feel like that's definitely the way you have to be. You have to have some flexibility in this industry at this point.
Yeah. And it kind of aligns with like what we're trying to do. Like we're, you know, coaching them to find their target market. And if their target market isn't, you know, bridal or men's haircuts, then like who are we to say like, hey, you need to do the service?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
I think one of the bigger things that drive people out is branding. Like I think at this point with Instagram and Pinterest and all of these other platforms, I think we're all so hyper aware of branding.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we are. Like we're literal psychopaths with branding and aesthetic. But I think as a salon owner and being aware of what your brand is, and for teams, you know, they want to be a part of a brand that represents them. And like we could use the example of somebody who's into like high fashion color. Is that what it's even called? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like pinks and purples and all of those things. Like they're typically not going to line up with our brand because we are more directed toward, you know, lived in color and things like that. So, but I feel like they would be part of like a more edgy salon that may have a different cultural feel and aesthetic feel. Whereas I feel like that alone, like, you know, like if you're not investing in making sure your branding is on point with what your vision is and what your company is, then that's potentially an issue too.
Yeah, you're not going to find the people that are supporting what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also important to mention, like, if you haven't updated your space or your logo in, like, 15 years, you should probably consider that now.
I would say, like, 5 years. I mean, for us, like, I feel like we, you know, like, at this point, I look at everything we do, and I'm like, I know in 5 years I'm going to hate this. And we put money aside for those types of investments to constantly improve and make sure that, you know, we are market leaders.
Yeah, you definitely need to go with the times and change and evolve your salon company, not just your people.
Yeah. What about like the control aspect? So like sometimes as owners, we can want to have like control over every situation, but I feel like in this climate, like a lot of stylists are looking for, you know, flexibility, being able to book their own clients, having access to their schedule. And I think that's one of the big things that's mentioned in interviews is like they don't, or they're not able to like book their own clients. They can't, you know, customize timing for a specific guest.
I spoke to a stylist not that long ago and she told me that the company that she came from, they weren't even allowed to like be friends with their clients on Facebook or Instagram.
Oh,
like
really?
They were not allowed to have any kind of social contact like outside of the salon.
Wow.
Which Wait, I it's think funny is you're nuts. Bringing this up because this is something that I can remember this conversation and I've been trying to figure it out. I have the worst memory in the world. So I'm happy you brought it up because it was like a literal thing. Like,
yeah, they weren't allowed, you're not allowed to have any. They weren't allowed to have cell phone contacts. Like they weren't allowed. The only like reach that they had to the client was through the front desk.
Oh, wow.
There was no social media. Like they were not allowed to friend them, be friends with them.
Yeah.
Accept a friend request from any of their clients.
Yeah.
Which who has the energy as an owner to sit there and monitor all that?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, can you imagine? We have like 80 some people.
I don't understand why you wouldn't want them to, because I feel like that like the true like foundation of our industry is relationships. Like, yeah, you could be great at hair, but there's also like, you know, that's what really makes people come back is like the relationship, the trust and the connection. And I feel like that just adds so much to
it. Definitely does. And I'm sure that those owners that, you know, have that kind of mentality, I'm sure they feel it. Like they have to know like how, like when their clients come in, they're literally just like a paying client. They're not like there because, you know, they're just there probably because it's convenient.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think now that we're on this, I can remember I was kind of mind blown the other day. And I don't mean this in a negative way to any owners who aren't using the digital world yet. But I had an interview the other day where they were still using calendars.
Oh my gosh.
That you write down appointments on. And I was like, whoa. Like,
yeah.
I was like, oh my goodness. Like, this is actually.
That's ancient.
It is, that's but this is what I'm ancient. Saying is that, like, I think the young generation is like, you know, that is not how they operate. Everything is digital. The whole world to them is digital. So if you're still operating in that type of format regarding booking systems, I mean, it's that's a major red flag, I think. And you will, if you're not losing people yet, you will be, because this generation, I think, is terrified by that. One of the other things that I feel stylists are really looking to, like the massive draw. I mean, let's talk about it right now. We have suites, we have commission salons.
Yep.
We have commission salons, we have booth running salons, we have suites. Like, those are the three main options for service providers in our industry right now. I would say the biggest draw to commission salons is culture.
Oh, 100%.
You guys feel that? Yeah.
Yes, for sure.
Mm-hmm. For us, I think that the massive draw to our company is the culture. And it's like a sisterhood at this point. I think that, you know, I mean, you guys can speak to this as well. Like, I just feel like people come to us because they see the energy that's provided through social media. They're attracted to this brand and this company that is so much bigger than just a name.
Yeah.
At this point, and people want to be a part of it.
I was just going to say, they want to be a part of something bigger than just like doing hair.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah. Well, I feel like our motto from the beginning has always been work hard, play hard. And we bring that. Like, we work hard. When Monday comes around, it's all business in the salon. I mean, we have a great culture there. It's all fun. But then we're all always down for a good time outside of work, too.
Oh, yeah. probably too much, but.
No, I think that's huge. I mean, that keeps people locked in. Like, they want to be part of that. They want their husbands and boyfriends and girlfriends to all be a part of it as well. You know, we offer some great things outside the salon because we play hard.
Yeah. The culture piece, it you know, I think we have mastered that in a lot of ways. I'm laughing because I'm thinking about Will this morning coming home from the gym, and he's like, yeah, I was just with Connie's husband at the gym, we were talking about like running marathons.
That's
and blah, blah, blah.
Awesome.
And I'm like,
that.
But that's it. Like, they are literally friends at this point.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, to what you said, it's like so much deeper than just, you know, coworkers. It is that's not how we roll.
Yeah.
No, the guys definitely have a friendship. And speaking on Will, he was making plans to golf last night with Kevin.
You know who he's golfing with today?
Who?
Alicia's mother.
Wait, what? He's with Jackie today golfing?
Jackie's taking them out for a round of golf.
Yeah. Wait, she's taking Joey and Will golfing?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they're
for
going.
What?
They're going.
I'm actually so jealous I can't be on this outing.
Back to culture. So on the flip side of having a strong, amazing culture in your salon, it can, if you're not providing that, it can drive people right out.
100%.
So if there's a bad culture, there's drama, there's bosses that just are want to be bosses and not really put themselves out on the playing field with their team, then that would have anybody running for the door.
So that's one thing that I think is very important, is they want strong leaders. They want leadership.
Yep.
You know, I think being a part of something where ultimately they're not the boss and they don't have to make the big decisions and they don't have to worry about budgets and inventory and all of that stuff, that's a benefit of being a part of commission salons at this point.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, if you're listening, obviously you're trying to better yourself here. Like, you're not, hopefully you don't have your heels dug in the ground and you're just like, I'm not, you know, trying to evolve at all. But I feel like one of the biggest things in regards to leaders is being able to go to your boss and have a conversation about something that may not be working and them like take you seriously and consider, you know, options. So I feel like we do a really good job of making sure that they feel comfortable enough to come to us. I mean, sometimes maybe too comfortable that the, you know, some of the stuff that gets brought to us, and I love it. I mean, I think it's great. It builds, you know, relationships, but also like improves the company at the same time.
For sure.
Well, touching on that, being a good leader in a salon, you have to be present. Like, you can't just be out of the salon and drop in every once in a while. I feel like for us, we do a really good job with that. We usually always, one of us is in the salons. Like today, we're doing a shoot, so we're not there, but we have our leaders there, our managers, and, you know, we'll probably touch base with them how many times throughout the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll probably stop in there at some point right after this, but we always make sure we're present, and our girls know and our team knows that they can come to us whenever they need to.
Let's talk about dress code.
Oh, I was going to say, on the flip side of that, I feel like, you know, a lot of people strive for like fairness and consistency. And dress code is one of the things that...
Dress code is going to be the death of me.
It is, but this is something, like,
don't even go after my jeans right now.
I feel your
skinny Gen X jeans.
I'll keep my Gen X jeans all day long. You keep your flat butt. Listen, mom, I got the jeans.
Flare going.
Flares are okay, but the flat butt mom jeans gotta go. It's gotta go. I don't know whoever thought to bring that back, but keep it in Europe. Don't bring it here.
All right, drop in the comments what type of jeans you're wearing.
Oh.
Yeah.
I can't get with it.
So dress code, I think, is like a driving factor for people. Like if your company dress code or standards don't align with somebody's creativity or lack of creativity, that's the nice way of saying it.
Yeah.
I think that that's a driving factor. Like, yeah. I feel like people want to go independent because they want to show up to work in sweatpants.
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen it.
That's what I mean.
I've literally seen stylists come in to work with pajamas on, pretty much.
Yeah. And that's what, like, you know, like, that's honestly, as weird as it may sound, a commissioned salon owner, I do think that's part of the reason why some people are considering going independent. They're sick of showing up in whatever dress code that you provide.
Yeah.
And for us, like, dress code's been a difficult thing. Mm-hmm. We're trial and error. We've tried so much.
Well, I think it depends on, like, what standards you have for your own company. Like, you know, you might have a more relaxed vibe at your salon, and that's okay too. But I feel like we, as a luxury salon, like, we have to provide some type of guidelines. And, like, to what you just said, I feel like something may look, like, super cute on somebody because they have, like, the whole look together. They have their makeup done. They have their hair done. But then somebody might wear that same exact outfit and look like they just rolled out of bed. Like, there's got to be some type of, like, balance between the two.
And it's hard, too, when you have a big company. Like, I mean, that works kind of like when you have 5 stylists in your salon and you guys all kind of have the same vibe and, like, you kind of, like, all can trend together. But when you have, you know, 22 people out on your floor or 50 people out on your floor and everybody is so mismatched and one looks so dressed up like they just walked out of, like, Fifth Avenue in New York City, then the other one looks like they just walked off of South Street down in Philly. Right. Like, it's definitely, it just doesn't bring a good overall vibe. So we do need guidelines for sure.
Yeah. We do. Our company does, for sure. Yeah. And we tried, you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, we literally went super relaxed with our dress code and the clients were like, what is going on?
We got feedback from the clients that they were like,
I hate this. Everybody needs to go back. But also the stylists were like, no, like, it's just not working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're so, like, unified that, like, you couldn't tell who worked there and who was a client. And I feel like the clients felt like that and the team felt like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I guess it just, like, kind of depends on your company, but.
True.
Trying to find out what works. I feel like we're not, like, super strict, but we have guidelines.
Yeah. I think one of the other big ones is the boss babe movement.
Your favorite.
My favorite topic.
Man, you're such a boss babe.
You're like, please don't call me that.
Listen, I'm a big fan of Natalie Ellis, who created, is the boss babe brand.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, the hashtag boss babe has just gone completely
anybody can be a boss babe right now.
And, well, I think that that's the thing. Like, it's like there's this draw.
Super sloppy.
There's this draw to be a boss babe. And, you know, the boss babe energy and, you know, independent. And I do my thing and I provide for myself and all of this stuff. And it's like, I can see the draw to that. I mean, listen, I'm an entrepreneur to my core. Like, you say one thing to me and my brain's thinking about ways to make that. How do you monetize that? How do you turn that into a business? Like, that's just how I operate from my core. But so I think that seeing, you know, I just think it's fake.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's what I think it is. I think it's fake.
It's driving people to open suites, obviously.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of times they, in their mind, are like, all right, this is what I do in services. I make $100,000 in services and I get to keep all that.
Yeah.
But in reality, like, they have nothing could ever prepare them for the overhead and the expenses that they're going to put into marketing and buying product and paying for a POS system and having to, you know, schedule your own clients. Like, they go into that, like, completely blindsided just for the fact that they can say that they're
a boss babe. Hashtag boss babe. Yeah.
And some people do great with it. And some people are probably like, holy shit, like this sucks, you know?
Like, 100%. And I mean, we've had those conversations with people.
Yeah.
We've had people that left suites and came back to commission salons. We have, you know, we're very close with a lot of people that are in suites and have conversations with them. And it's funny because I feel like that has come up with me before where someone's like, you know, I loved it. I just wanted to be like this boss babe. And I'm like, that can't be the reason why you choose this for your career.
Yeah.
It can't.
Yeah.
There has to be so much more research in that.
Yeah.
And like, listen, like what happened to hashtag boss? Why you gotta be a boss babe?
How come there's no boss bro?
But what I was just about to say is the whole boss babe movement kind of lost a lot of its value. I mean, I don't know if you guys know, but like it's graduation time and I've been seeing like a girl graduate high school and it's hashtag boss babe because she's in her cap and gown. And I'm like, dude, you're not a boss babe. You graduated high school. What you're supposed to do. Like, that's not the meaning behind a boss babe. But I get it. They think they accomplished something so that they become a boss babe. But I think the meaning behind the actual boss babe is just not there anymore. So it's kind of like, I don't even want to be called a boss babe. And I got to say, like, who I am today is like completely different than who I was 10 years ago. Like, I have self-evolved so much. I've put so much time and effort, like you guys do.
Into, even 5 years ago.
Just into, what I'm doing and what I can do better for people. And I just feel like the whole boss babe movement is just, anybody can be a boss babe.
So, unpopular opinion, we are the anti-boss babe.
Yes.
Yeah. Basically, like, if you have to brag that you're a boss babe, you're probably not.
Yeah. but yeah, I mean, I would say that those are the main things that are driving people out of commission salons. I think that there's a very strong misunderstanding of the money that can be made, the financials that are happening in suites. And listen, I'm sure there's some people out there that are crushing it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to undermine that either, because if you have business understanding, which we instill in all of our people.
Yeah. Like, I feel like they're, I mean, in a sense, like, we encourage them to, like, kind of run their own little mini business behind the chair, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. I mean, I'm confident in that. Like, when we opened our suites and we lost our team members to the suites, I was confident that they were all going to do pretty well. You know,
didn't doubt that for a second. But we also, what we're really good at, and going back to this, is our culture. So, like, teach that so everybody could survive on their own if they needed to. Mm-hmm. But nobody, you know, it's like the culture that we create, there's no reason for anybody to actually really want to leave. I mean, you're going to have a few here and there, but even for clients, like, they come in and they recognize, are you going into labor?
No, but this baby, like.
Oh, dear God.
Would he just kick you in the rib?
I don't know what it does in there. It's like tumbling.
It was giving you a high five, boss.
Yesterday I did it.
Good job, mom. I like that.
Good job, boss babe.
And Lexi was like, what is happening?
Boss,
I was like,
mama.
I don't know.
Well, getting back to what I was trying to say is I feel like people, when you have a strong culture, you know, there's no reason for people to actually want to leave and go out on their own. They want to be part of it. And clients see it too. And they come in and they love that.
Yeah.
Like they 100%. Absolutely love coming into the salon and seeing the interactions between everybody and having that fun, upbeat vibe and having good conversations. And someone that's not even doing their hair, just stopping over and being like, hey, Sally, how are you? Like, you know, they don't get that when they're in a suite. So not going back and forth on, you know, why you should be in a salon and why you should be in a suite, but just saying, these are some of the things.
Yeah.
The camaraderie, just the culture in general.
For sure.
The last thing that I think is big that we haven't touched on yet is the support staff that you get in commission salons typically. Uh-huh. I mean, think about that. I think that that's a big thing for people. It's knowing that they're going to have associate support or assistant support.
A front desk.
Somebody who's in between.
Leaders. Someone that can...
Mentoring.
Yes.
Like, these are things that I think draw people to commission salons at this point.
Yeah.
I think they're necessary, to be honest.
It's driving them out.
Well, I was going to say, if they're lacking any of that, it's probably.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That would make somebody run to, you know, do their own thing.
Yeah.
You guys were in that position.
Yeah.
So.
Well, hopefully we've inspired some of you guys to implement or take away some things that you're currently doing to keep some of your team.
So if you found value in today's episode of the Go Ham podcast, hit like, hit subscribe, and we will see you on the next one.